The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It's a Wednesday. Welcome to it. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com, the Progressive Voices Network. We're on YouTube, we're on TuneIn, we're on Facebook Live, we're on NicoleSandler.com. However you're listening, welcome. And if maybe you're listening later via the podcast or the archives, however you listen, welcome to the program. You know, yesterday I started the show talking about my friend Mitchell Stolberg, who passed away over the weekend, a great progressive activist here in South Florida. And it's nice. I opened the South Florida Sun Sentinel today and saw a lovely obit. And not just on the, you know, obituary page either. It was in the middle of the local section of the paper that serves Broward County. So I'm glad that he's getting at least some of the recognition that he deserves. But I neglected yesterday to talk about Carl Reiner. Carl Reiner, one of the great comedy geniuses, I was going to say of my generation, but certainly not, because he was 94 or thereabouts when he died over the weekend. And in watching all the tributes to Carl Reiner, I never met him. I've met so many comedy greats. I did meet Mel Brooks, and it was Mel Brooks' 94th birthday just the other day, and I posted a picture online from when I met him when I worked on the Mark and Brian show. And, 98. Oh, thank you, Diane Russell. Carl Reiner was 98. It's Mel Brooks who was 94. Forgive me. You know, I grew up with him. The Dick Van Dyke Show, and I've been lucky enough to meet Dick Van Dyke, but I never met Carl Reiner, and it's one of my regrets, I guess, not that I could do anything about it, but what a loss. But that's what happened. Time passes, and we lose these people that we've grown up with, and the older we get, I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's scary, though, because as we get older, look, I never thought I would be 60. It just was out of my frame of reference. You know, it's just that it was not going to happen. And so, you know, my fear is so many of our heroes, people we grew up with, we grew up idolizing and laughing to and listening to and, you know, living with. And it's the circle of life. So we need to prepare ourselves, because there's somebody wrote a few months, well, now probably about a year ago or something, a depressing article about how we are coming up on the age of the classic rockers, who are all getting older and they're all going to start kicking. It's nothing to laugh about. It's devastating. I don't even want to think about it. But when death hits so close, you can't help but think about it. So obviously, that's on my mind. Anyway, Carl Reiner, a great loss. Oh, but thankfully, that was weird. Thankfully, he, you know, he gave us a lot of wonderful, wonderful comedy. And you know how I feel about comedy. I think it's imperative. It's like music. You know, as much as I focus on politics and everything that's wrong with the world, that's how much we need to bring other things into our lives that bring us enjoyment, whether it's laughter or music or, you know, whatever it is that does it for you. So just my way to encourage you to, as Warren Zevon said, enjoy every sandwich. Seriously. So because of that, we do our Music Monday shows, and I'm excited that this coming Monday, I'll be joined by an artist named Peter Himmelman. You may not be familiar with Peter Himmelman, but he's been playing music for decades. He now lives in New York, but he's from Minnesota, and actually, I probably won't mention this when he's on with us on Monday, but he's Bob Dylan's brother-in-law. So he is part of that family. And Peter Himmelman, it's interesting. I posted a picture on Facebook today, if you happen to follow me on Facebook and on Twitter. Today is the 26th anniversary of the day we signed on a radio station on the air in Los Angeles. It was called KSCA. The call letter stood for Southern California's Album Alternative at the time. It was an eclectic rock station. We didn't play top 40. We broke new artists. We played music that you hadn't heard before. And the day we signed on the air, a couple of us went down to Channel 5, the KTLA studios, to let them know the new radio station was signing on the air that day. And I went because I was known. I was a personality on the air in Los Angeles already from the Mark and Brian show. So people knew who I was. And Peter Himmelman came with me and just played a little bit of a live song, you know, as much as a television morning show will let somebody play. So anyway, Peter Himmelman, who I've not spoken to in probably 20 years, but I so appreciate his music. He will join us this Monday for Monday Music. And again, when we do Monday Music, the first half hour is just like our regular first half hour on any other day. A lot of news, a little bit of funny. You know, try to bring you up to date on what's going on. And then I try to turn the focus elsewhere for just a little while, because if all we did was concentrate on politics, we'd all be pulling our hair out, or even worse, we'd all be looking like Donald Trump. Oh God, God help us all. All right. So, let's start with a funny, and this funny actually came to us by way of, let me see if I can find his name. A listener sent it to me early this morning. It was in my it's listener David. His name is David. I won't give his last name because I don't know. Anyway, so he sent me this video this morning, and when I realized what it was, I accepted it. So here's the thing: I know I've got a lot of people who listen to this show who really recoil at the sound of Donald Trump's voice. And I don't blame you. It's like fingernails on a blackboard to me too. But there's a woman, her name is Liz Plank, and she's Canadian, and she made this video, and she obviously took the time out of her day to edit together some of Donald Trump's words to make him say the things that we need him to say. So this is Liz Plank. And again, if you're just listening to the audio stream, if you're not watching the video on YouTube or Facebook Live, that's okay. Just know she chopped up the video too. So when you hear what she has Trump saying, she's got it on video. As usual, I will post the video on the blog at NicoleSandler.com along with today's show. But behold the magnificence of the editing prowess of Liz Plank. Take it away, Liz.
Hi, I'm Liz Plank, and as a Canadian and as a woman, I consider myself a foremost expert when it comes to apologizing. And I was just thinking that there's one particular person that we could all use an apology from right now, and since he hasn't done it, I thought I would say it for him.
Ladies and gentlemen, today I'm announcing
I'm sorry
for the way I handled the whole coronavirus pandemic right now. I'm doing a very, very terrible job. Thousands of people are dying and dying. Violently dying. It's kind of my fault. Can you believe the fake news is still showing my briefings in these briefings? Well, I think I've been incredibly racist toward the Asian Americans. We have to protect our Asian Americans. For me, I suggested medical treatments like hydroxychloroquine and a disinfectant, even though I'm not a doctor. I'm not a doctor. Please listen to Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx. Again, I'm not a doctor. I have blamed a lot of people. And I'm not just blaming President Obama. I blame the governors, the World Health Organization in China for my big failure. That was a tremendous failure with regard to the virus. I can say very honestly, I'm just a third-rate president. I am, I will tell you, a tremendous danger to our country. But don't worry about it. In a few months, you can vote. One day, my presidency will go away. You know it. You know it is going away. I said, this virus will go away fast, and it hasn't. So please thank our healthcare workers. And remember this, ultraviolet or just very powerful light is not a cure. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Okay. that was just creative and awesome. So I hope it didn't assault your ears too much. But if you strung all those words together and you heard what Liz Plank, our Canadian friend, made Donald Trump say, it was pretty awesome. An apology. Can you imagine? The man has never apologized for anything in his life, but we have him apologizing. And yes, that took a lot of time and a lot of patience. And Liz Plank, we applaud you. Good work. All right. Today's Wednesday. And actually, I had planned on, if you listened to the show last Friday and you heard Ellie Mistal, I thought by today we would have the Supreme Court would have finished handing down all its rulings for the current term, the term which actually ended yesterday. They're delayed, obviously, because of the coronavirus, it threw them off their game. So they are slowly releasing the opinions. Now, I guess today they were supposed to have some kind of conference at which maybe they were going to announce when the next round of decisions was going to be announced. I didn't notice. I've been kind of crazy busy today. I'm also guest hosting the broadcast tonight. So it's a busy day for me. But maybe tomorrow, not Friday, because Friday is the legal holiday for the 4th of July. Maybe Monday. I don't know. But I thought by today it would all be done. So, frankly, we're surprised. We know that DACA is safe for now. Abortion rights are safe for now. And it's not like John Roberts is some liberal hero. It's not like he came to the rescue and sided with Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer, whose name I just totally blanked on yesterday. I couldn't think of Stephen Breyer. I was pulling out John Paul Stevens. I was pulling out Souter. I couldn't, you know, brain farts, old age. I don't know. But anyway, Stephen Breyer is the fourth alleged liberal on the court. And so it's not like John Roberts became one of them, because he didn't. He ruled, he sided with them basically on technicalities. So those issues can still come back up. So don't forget, it's the Supreme Court, baby. You better go vote on November 3rd. My birthday is November 4th. Please make it a happy one for me. Anyway, boy, I'm all over the place today, aren't I? Sorry about that. I thought by today we would know all the decisions. We're still waiting on the biggies have to do with birth control, whether or not an employer can not cover contraceptive care for their employees. And the other biggie, of course, are Donald Trump's taxes and financial records, and whether or not the Manhattan District Attorney and Congress have a right to subpoena those records. So those decisions aren't out yet. Well, I thought they were all going to be done by now, so I invited Digby to come on and talk to us about it. So we'll do some discussion about what the Supreme Court already did. But the other part of it is today, July 1st, we are halfway through 2020, the most horrific year I think any of us have ever lived through. And I'll run down some of what's happened in this year as we get through. But so that's what I rethought what we're going to talk with Digby about is all the things that have happened in 2020. And oh my God, will we be able to make it another 6 months or 4 months till Election Day? 4 months and 2 days. Anyway, yes, there is another, the faithless elector ruling also, whether or not the members of the electors of the Electoral College have to vote the way the state votes. So if we have time, I'll run down all that. If I don't get to it now, I promise you, I get to it on today's broadcast. Filling in for Brad Friedman, we replay the Ellie Mistal interview from Friday, and I ran down all the Supreme Court rulings from last week and this week to bring you up to date. And I run through the decisions that we're still waiting for. So if we don't get to it on this show, just figure today's a two-parter. Tune in to progressivevoices.com at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific to hear it. Or you can go to bradblog.com and you can just play it from there. You know, Brad's like me. His show isn't behind a paywall either. He works for, you know, your donations. So support your local online radio broadcaster. All right. Okay, let's take a quick break. I believe Progressive Voices started out okay. We're really working on these issues, trying to get it working correctly so that, you know, we don't have a commercial parade playing at one time. So we'll go to a break. Come right back. It's Nicole Sandler on the Progressive Voices Network. And it should have fired the spots, but I'm looking at the thing now. I have a way to tell if it fired, and it didn't. So obviously there's an issue here. It just didn't fire. So Progressive Voices is still with us. I'm going to try it one more time. Nothing happened. So, well, I'll play for you what I was going to play anyway during the break, if Progressive Voices had gone to a break. And that is a new ad. Now, we've been playing a lot of these ads from the Lincoln Project, who are so good. Again, I vacillate. I love them and I hate them. I love them because they know that Donald Trump is a clear and present danger to our nation and the world, and they want to get him the hell out of office. The hate part of it comes from they're still Republicans and they don't have the same goals and aspirations as we have. So they would love nothing more than to take over the Democratic Party and put in their, you know, neocon agenda. You know, they're still Republicans. They're not Donald Trump batshit crazy, but they're still Republicans, and that's what they want to see happen. They Republican policies. But, you know, I'll take their help in getting Trump out of office, but then I want them to go away. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. Anyway, another group that's making incredible ads is Vote Vets, votevets.org. And, well, here's their latest. Let me just play it for you, because we can.
On Sunday, June 28th, 2020, the Mississippi State Legislature voted to take down the Confederate battle flag. A day many thought would never come. But Donald Trump had a different vision of America. That was the message the President of the United States shared with millions. On a day when the heart of the Confederacy finally lowered its flag, Donald Trump was still fighting the Civil War.
You will not replace us.
America is better than Donald Trump. We want to move forward together. This November, say no to Donald Trump's racist anger and division. Say yes to a good man who can help us heal.
Oh my God, I played the wrong one. And okay, I'm an idiot. Credit where credit is due. That was a Lincoln Project ad. I thought I pulled the Vote Vets ad, which I'm going to have to look for now because the Vote Vets ad is really, really good. I thought I queued that one up, but apparently I didn't. Yeah, that's what happens when you're a one-woman show. All right, well, so I guess we'll just get on with the news since Progressive Voices never went to the spot. I'm just looking to see if I have that Vote Vets ad handy because it really is good. If I don't find it today, I'll find it for you for tomorrow. I don't see it. I'll look tomorrow. Yeah, I'll be more prepared tomorrow. Oh, wait, it might be in this folder. One more thing. Ah, I found it. Oh, no, that's a Lincoln. It's another Lincoln Project. Damn it. All right. Well, I'm going to play this one for you, too, but that's not the one I wanted to play either. All right. We'll do it later. sometimes just can't wait. All right. Let's get to some of the news, shall we? Because we can.
Let the news today, oh boy.
The big news, of course, has to do with this story that's not going away, nor should it. And that is the story about the Russian bounty that Russia was paying a bounty to Taliban and Taliban-aligned groups in Afghanistan for killing U.S. troops. And, of course, Donald Trump is doing what Donald Trump always does, and that is saying it's a hoax. Because anything that goes against his line of bullshit is a hoax. He doesn't know any other word. It's a hoax or it's fake news. That's it. It's neither a hoax nor is it fake news. And the New York Times is following the money, reporting, quote, American officials intercepted electronic data showing large financial transfers from a bank account controlled by Russia's military intelligence agency, the GRU, to a Taliban-linked account. Evidence that supported their conclusion that Russia covertly offered bounties for killing American and coalition troops in Afghanistan. So Democratic lawmakers went to a meeting yesterday with everybody who was a political appointee. It was run by Mark Meadows, who's Trump's political White House chief of staff. There was nobody from the intelligence community there. Adam Schiff, who, you know, is the chair of the House Committee on Intelligence, he was there and he is pissed.
As we look at these, and I'm going to call them allegations because I can't confirm or deny any underlying intelligence. As we look at these allegations, number one, the President of the United States should not be inviting Russia into the G7 or G8. We should be considering what sanctions are appropriate to further deter Russia's malign activities, not further ingratiating Russia into the community of civilized nations.
You think?
And I find it inexplicable in light of these very public allegations that the president hasn't come before the country and assured the American people that he will get to the bottom of whether Russians are putting a bounty on the heads of American troops.
It's
and
amazing.
That he will do everything in his power to make sure that we protect American troops. I do not understand for a moment why the president isn't saying this to the American people right now and is relying on, I don't know, I haven't heard, I haven't been briefed. That's just not excusable.
You think?
His responsibility as commander-in-chief is to protect our troops. And I shared the concern at the White House today that I think many of us have, which is there may be a reluctance to brief the president on things he doesn't want to hear. And that may be more true with respect to Putin and Putin's Russia than with respect to any other subject matter. Many of us do not understand his affinity for that autocratic ruler who means our nation ill. And so if there's a problem with being willing to brief the president on intelligence he doesn't want to hear, that's a problem for our entire nation's security.
Yeah,
so
it is.
In the Intel Committee, we have asked for an in-person briefing by the intel agencies. We've asked for any underlying documentary intelligence they may or may not have.
Okay, so there's a little bit of what Adam Schiff said yesterday after this ridiculous meeting at which nobody from the intelligence community attended, and they were being briefed by Trump's political appointees. Sorry, that's not good enough. That will not give you credible information. Now, someone in the chat room just said, there are a lot of progressives who are going, oh, here we go again. This is Russiagate all over again. No, it isn't. Look, I understand being cautious and questioning authority daily. It's one of my slogans, for God's sake. But that's why we have a free and open press. It would be one thing if it was one media outlet out on a limb saying we found this and nobody else corroborated it. But every major media outlet has backed up and confirmed it on their own. You know, sometimes you'll hear a report where the New York Times will break a story and then NBC News will report it, but say NBC has not yet confirmed the story, but the New York Times is reporting thus and such. Well, now they're all confirming it. After the New York Times reported it, the Wall Street Journal was next. And the Wall Street Journal is owned by Rupert Murdoch. Believe me, they're not part of the so-called liberal press. And then everyone else has also corroborated it. And now the New York Times is continuing by following the money. There's a money trail. What more do you need? And now, you know, we're hearing people saying that John Bolton in March told colleagues that he had briefed Donald Trump on this very thing. Now, he won't confirm that one way or another because I guess that's classified. It's probably one of the things he had to pull out of his book because maybe there's classified information there. But this blanket distrust of the media, sorry, is just playing into Trump's hands. Check and double check and always consider the source. But just to say, oh, if the corporate media is reporting it, I'm not going to believe it. Well, that's your fucking problem. And you're an idiot because that's the fourth estate. The media is there to do oversight for we the people. And when every major news organization corroborates the story, there's something there. Of course, after, and there's somebody in the chat room, still no proof. Bolton will be dancing with Ellen soon. Shut up, Jeff Adelman, whoever the fuck you are. You know, go back, go over to Fox, hang out at InfoWars, and put on a tinfoil hat. You know, either you can believe what's being brought to us when multiple sources corroborate it, or you can spread something that you found on the Daily Caller. Because it seems the same people who poo-poo anything from the New York Times or the Washington Post will cite something from InfoWars or the Daily Caller or what's Red State. Or I don't know those places because I don't go there. I go to credible sources. And when enough credible sources have the same story because they have corroborated the information on their own, I believe them. I also know and believe that Donald Trump doesn't read his presidential daily briefings. He just doesn't read. It's got nothing to do with the daily briefings. He doesn't read. And Kayleigh McEnany was asked about that at this very hastily thrown together briefing yesterday. Here's a little bit of the question and a little bit of her answer.
Intelligence officials to work harder to determine whether or not this was true, make, you know, a series of judgments. And so I guess more broadly, you know, I would re-ask the question of whether it was in his material, but ask you maybe to defend why the president isn't necessarily reading his PDB.
Why he's not reading?
When there are these types of issues if it arrives.
The president does read, and he also consumes intelligence verbally. This president, I'll tell you, is the most informed person on planet Earth.
Okay. who knew there was going to be another funny here? Thank you, McEnany. You really are a ninny. He consumes... what did he say? He consumes information verbally as well. Does he eat it? Is that what she's saying? Because he doesn't read it. We know from multiple sources who have left the White House that he doesn't read the presidential daily briefings, and he doesn't even like to sit still for the intelligence briefings that the authorities know, the briefers know. They have to bring pictures and charts and dumb everything down and put it into like a 10-minute block because that's as far as his attention span will go. He's a fucking moron. And as Donald Trump said, as Joe Biden said, him not knowing this stuff. Look, they knew about it. The White House knew about it. If Donald Trump didn't know about it, that's his fault because he doesn't want to know about it. And that, as Joe Biden said yesterday, is a dereliction of duty.
It appears as though from what I have, and I don't have access to classified information anymore, but if what I have heard over the last week and the recent reporting that it was in the PDB, the presidential daily brief. The presidential daily brief is something I read every single day as vice president. The president read it every day. I was briefed every morning before I got to the White House and then again.
Because that's how it works.
So the idea that somehow he didn't know or isn't being briefed, it is a dereliction of duty if that's the case. And if he was briefed and nothing was done about this, that's a dereliction of duty.
Exactly. Exactly. It's his fault. If he wasn't briefed, it's because, number one, his aides hide it from him because they're afraid he's going to spill the beans to his wannabe buddy, Vlad, who's riding him like that horse on the beach. You know the picture. Yeah. Or they know that he can't handle what's going on, so they hide it from him. This is not the man we need in charge. I just don't know how we're going to make it till November. Maybe Digby does. So in case you don't know, and you should know who Digby is, of course, Digby is one of the original progressive bloggers. She's got Digby's Hullabaloo. She's been doing it since, you know, the infancy of blogs. And, you know, these days you find her also at digbysblog.net and at salon.com. And, well, let's get Digby on the line.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
Hello, Digby.
Hey there, Nicole. How are you?
Hanging in there. yeah, you know, we last spoke a few months ago, and nothing much has changed. I'm still hunkering down at home, trying to stay safe from this virus, watching people go crazy around us. I mean, I know they're doing it out. You live in the Santa Monica area. I'm in the South Florida area, and both places are now exploding with new cases of coronavirus. Where this is going to have to, we're going to have to lock everything down again. Do you think?
Oh, it's already happened in California. Governor Newsom just locked the whole state down, or most of the counties where it's exploding anyway, for 3 weeks. Closed the restaurants,
wow.
Closed the bars, the beaches, everything.
Yep.
I'm not surprised. I go for a walk in my neighborhood. You know, I'm isolating. I'm going nowhere, basically. I go grocery shopping once every couple of weeks, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do take a walk because I need exercise, and
right.
I'm walking around my neighborhood, and I've been watching since they opened up on June 1st, everybody just went back to normal, and they started seeing people in restaurants. They were crowded. The bars in my neighborhood, just, you know, people having big parties. You can hear them all, you know, partying
wow.
late into the night. Am I surprised? No. Of course that was going to happen. People didn't use their heads, and I don't think that I noticed that a lot of the waiters and people like that were not wearing masks in some of these places, and, you know, it's just, of course this was going to happen. They made the assumption. I mean, these aren't Trump voters. I live on the west.
No, not all of them.
It's the People's Republic of Santa Monica, you know, so it wasn't a political statement. It's that when they opened them up, people who probably are not politically attuned or are only paying a certain amount of, you know, sort of very vague attention to what's going on, the government opened up. They assumed it was safe. They just went out and they did it. And because there was no mandate that you had to wear masks, and they figured that the restaurants were doing and bars were doing what they were supposed to do, they just figured everything was fine. Now, I did know that most of them were younger, although plenty of older people. I mean, there are people my age walking around without
really?
Masks, too. Now, it's changed. They're starting to come around again, and I can tell that there's a little bit more concern, but that's because, you know, he closed the stuff down. So, you know, people, I guess it isn't safe anymore.
Right. And our
It's a public education problem. It is. It's an education problem.
Well, it is. There's that. And of course, there's a reason why Donald Trump, you know, proclaimed, "I love the poorly educated." Right? I mean, seriously, because they're easier to control.
Sure.
And they're going along with his nonsense of not wearing a mask. No, his latest today was, "I wear a mask. Actually, I wore one, and I look pretty good." Ew.
Looked like the Lone Ranger, he said.
Oh, you
know.
God.
Well, this was, and, you know, he will not, he's not going to wear a black mask because it's going to smear
black.
His makeup. And you and I both know that, right? I mean, this is, you know, it's like, it's so obvious that this is the reason that he won't wear it. And then if he has to hook something behind his ears, his hair could get messed up. I mean, the whole thing, it's just impossible. He can't possibly wear a mask. God only knows. But, you know, I guess it's a step in the right direction. That he, you know, said he looked like the Lone Ranger.
Oh, please.
I mean, it's better than saying that Joe Biden looked weird and was covering up his face for some other reason. That's what he said the other day.
Did he?
So, here we are.
God, he's delusional. There's something seriously wrong with this man. And you know, looking at how the rest of the world sees us, seeing the European Union open back up for tourism and list 15 nations that they're welcoming people back in. And Algeria is on that list. Rwanda is on that list. The United States of America sits with Brazil and India and Russia. As you know, stay away. You don't have your shit together. You can't come here.
It's so true. And, you know, one of the saddest things about all this, I read, I can't remember who it was. It was a scientist from Europe. I think he was a German guy who was saying that, you know, he said, look, everything we know about how to handle an outbreak like this, how to handle a pandemic, you know, U.S. scientists led the way on all of this. It was the U.S. that knew everything. The CDC was the greatest public health agency on the planet. We depended on them to do it. And he just was sort of sadly just saying, you know, I just can't believe what's happened. I can't believe that how badly the United States has handled this and how awful the results are. And he said, I just never would have thought that could happen because, you know, the U.S. was the world leader. And not that long ago. In fact, James Fallows, the writer for
The Atlantic,
former Jimmy Carter speechwriter, he had a great piece this week. If you can read, get to The Atlantic. He's an amateur pilot. And so he kind of compared the coronavirus response to what would happen if it were a plane crash and the NTSB came and looked at it.
Yes.
It's a really, really interesting analogy, and I mean, that may sound weird, but it was a really, really interesting way of putting it.
Here, you know what? I have an excerpt from that because I put it in my show sheet for today because I found it fascinating. He said, what if the NTSB, or National Transportation Safety Board, I think is what it stands for, were brought in to look at the Trump administration's handling of the pandemic? What would its investigation conclude? And here's part of his answer. This was a journey straight into a mountainside with countless missed opportunities to turn away. A system was in place to save lives and contain disaster. The people in charge of the system could not be bothered to avoid the doomed course.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he goes into the in detail, and it's just really, really stunning. And, you know, he goes back and looks at previous administrations. We know that the Obama administration left a full booklet on pandemic, and they had the inside the NSC, they had the special group that was working on it. But, you know, it wasn't just them. The Bush administration had one of those too. And they had gone through, because they went through SARS I can't remember, the avian flu, I guess, whatever the other one was.
Right.
And they had gone through this, so they were aware of it. So, it wasn't just Obama. It was I'm no fan of the Bush administration, but they weren't so bad that they threw out all the pandemic stuff and just said, to hell with it. It's going to go away, you know, like Trump is saying. I mean, they also, just like the Obama people, and of course, you know, this is the thing. It has to be updated all the time because, as Fallows points out in his article, you know, when the Bush people wrote their, you know, sort of book on pandemics, the technology was different, right? We didn't have at that point, we didn't have all the cell phones and all the kind of tracking that we had. So it was updated during Obama and should have been updated when Trump came in. But of course, we know what happened. They threw it out. Oh, and by the way, our hero, John Bolton, was part of throwing it out. I mean, he's the guy who disbanded the pandemic response team in the National Security Council. So, you know, I mean, I'm grateful for his book and everything, but come on. You know, the guy's still John Bolton.
Thank you. He is still John Bolton. That says that he is, and he has always been John Bolton. And just the fact that he did not testify when he could have, he held out for the paycheck, screw him. Anybody want a copy of the book? I have a PDF. Send me an email. I will send you a link to the PDF. Because, you know, people may want to read it, but I don't want to put a dime in that man's pocket. So I will share. Yep. And no,
I have it too.
I didn't pay for it either.
And that's how I read it.
Yes, and I didn't pay for it either.
I wouldn't pay a penny. I wouldn't take it for free if somebody handed me the actual book that someone had paid for, you know, in a used bin. I wouldn't pay for it. I just, you know, the guy just he's an absolute traitor as far as I'm concerned. Yep. And some of the stuff, I'm listening to him, and I get it. A lot of what he said, I think, rings true. It follows on what we've heard before, you know, for the last 3 years about Trump. I mean, none of it really seemed like, wow, that's really out there. You know, I can't believe that's so far beyond anything I've ever heard before. But whenever I hear him on CNN, or, you know, he's done dozens of interviews, and I hear him, and my teeth just grit because he's such an ass. He's just an ass, and he's always been one. And the Democrats committed impeachment malpractice, and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, maybe if you had testified, you fucking asshole, things would have been different. Sorry, I get angry because he's the one who committed malpractice. He was in that White House, just like we're hearing now of all these, you know, from you wrote at salon.com today, Digby, a piece that you type that is headlined on the phone with foreign leaders. Trump is delusional and uninformed. Who'd have thunk it? And this is based on Carl Bernstein's reporting over at CNN, which I talked about yesterday, and it blew my mind. And, you know, Carl Bernstein talks about everyone from General Kelly to Mattis to, you know, this one and that one and Tillerson and everyone else who saw that what he was doing on the phone with these foreign leaders, putting his own personal needs or wants above the needs of the nation and just being a total idiot, that they were all horrified, but none of them did anything. Not one of them spoke up and said, this man is a clear and present danger to this country and the planet.
And they all admit that that's what they thought. I mean, they weren't just sitting there watching him or listening in on these calls and going, boy, this guy, he's really kind of, you know, he's an idiot. Boy, what a fool, blah, 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 you know, but, you know, geez, he sure doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, they were saying this man is a threat to the national security of the United States.
Right.
I mean, this is the stuff he was doing was so far beyond. I mean, I'm sure George Bush sounded like a moron on the phone, too.
Well, he was.
You know, I mean, that guy didn't know anything, and he was an idiot, and he said a lot of stupid things. I mean, I remember him, the way he behaved in these foreign situations. He was always kind of a goofball.
He was a moron,
you know? I mean,
right.
He certainly, he was an idiot. But, you know, he knew enough to sort of, you know, at least listen to what the advisors were saying, I'm sure, about what was supposed to happen on the call and what not to say and what to say. I mean, you know, he wasn't just you know, blatantly kind of ignoring everything, refusing to listen to anything that anybody said, and just kind of going on this assumption that he is this, you know, it was this stable genius that no matter what he said, his gut was telling him, you know, more truth than what anybody else could say. And boy, I mean, the stuff he did, I mean, calling Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, stupid to her face.
Unbelievable.
I'm telling you, I mean, just forgetting the misogyny of it, of course, he treats the women much, much worse than he treats the men. He's very, very crude, apparently. But calling her stupid, I mean, the woman has a PhD in you know, quantum physics or something. I mean,
I'll take her intelligence over his
brilliant.
Any day of the week. Any day of the week. Yeah.
Any day of the week. And, I mean, this is a guy who, as you were pointing out earlier, he doesn't read. And, I mean, he doesn't read anything.
Nothing.
He can barely read a teleprompter.
Yep.
And you know, the fact that he, I mean, he's just barely literate, and I'm not sure he can comprehend anything.
Mm-mm.
You know, I mean, what we're seeing, and he said it again today, the virus is just going to go away. It's going to go away. I mean, he's convinced himself that that's it. The performance that he has put on during this crisis that we've been undergoing for the last few months, the ignorance on display on his part and the complete inability to understand just some really basic, you know, amounts of logic, like, you know, well, if we weren't doing so much testing, we wouldn't have so many cases.
right.
I mean, that's so dumb. Like, just I can't even wrap my mind around how dumb that is.
Right. So if I never got an X-ray of my chest, that discovered. I wouldn't have had lung cancer.
No. No, that your mistake was getting tested. If you hadn't gotten tested, you wouldn't have gotten it.
I wouldn't have gotten it.
I mean, this
right.
is this, and he kept saying it over and over again, and apparently thinking somehow that this really isn't a virus. It's kind of like a reality show competition with other countries, in which your numbers are sort of you're trying to control your numbers,
right?
And it has nothing. There's no underlying reality to it. I mean, the whole thing is just the fact that they're saying that Joe Biden is, cognitively impaired
right.
when this guy is out there saying
right.
things like that.
Pot meat
I just,
kettle.
I can't even believe it.
No, it is stunning. I mean, it's the have you looked in a mirror lately thing. The fact that he would comment on anyone else's cognitive abilities is just stunning.
It's so beyond. And by the way, I watched Joe Biden's speech.
He was okay.
He did all right. He was great.
Yeah.
Look, the guy, when we were during the primary,
yeah.
I had some concerns
Me
because
too.
I thought, man, this guy just is not with it. But I think he was rusty. I think the truth is, sure, he is older. It's probably not as, he's not quite as quick on his feet as he once
right.
was, but he's really, he's really improved. And maybe it's just the fact that I'm listening so much to Trump that he comes on and I'm going, oh my God, Joe Biden is like, he's
Great.
The most vital, youthful, energetic, brilliant man I've seen in politics in many a day. And of course, that's not true, but the comparison is so obvious. I mean, Joe Biden is normal.
Yes.
He's normal.
He is.
Trump is
and,
not.
And the other thing is, that's the other thing that's comforting at this point about Biden is he knows how Washington works. He knows
yeah.
how government works. He understands how you deal with foreign leaders. He knows the pomp and circumstance and the norms. And
right.
I never thought I would long for the days of the norms. But Norm, we need Norm.
Norm. Well, I don't think we realized. I mean, this is one of the big lessons of the Trump presidency. We didn't realize how dependent we were on these norms. We didn't. I don't think I ever understood just exactly how much everything depended on everyone kind of observing these sort of, almost ritualistic modes of behavior. Because you can't legislate against everything. You can't make everything, a law. So you depended on the sort of good faith of the people that you put in charge, even
mm-hmm.
though, we may have disagreed with them and disagreed strongly on policy. And by the way, the Republicans have been eroding these norms for quite some time now. But nonetheless, I don't think I understood. Well, I know I didn't. Understood just how tremendously we depended on people observing these things as being important just in and of themselves, not because they were legal or illegal, but because they sort of were an expression of our democratic values.
Yep.
That you didn't behave this way because you didn't want to degrade the government and our country and who we are. You wouldn't do the kind of things that Donald Trump has done. I mean, considering just what we were talking about,
yep.
Dealing with foreign leaders, for instance,
that's
that you
right.
wouldn't behave that way because it's just wrong. It's unpatriotic. It's dangerous. All these things. There's no law against a president acting like an asshole on the phone to every foreign leader he talks to and kowtowing to dictators. There's no law against that. We just sort of assumed they wouldn't do
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
And now we know, right?
Now
and
we
I
know.
You, here's the thing, Now we know, and the next one that comes along, President Tom Cotton say, or maybe President Tucker Carlson,
please.
God help us. those guys have been watching this too. And
or,
now
or
they
President
know
Ivanka.
As well what they can
Ivanka.
Get away with.
Yeah. Heather Digby Parton is with us. And so, the stories that have come out this week, I was talking about we are at the halfway mark through 2020. And so, oh my God, I don't know that we can take 6 months more of a year like this. This has been the year from hell. And just this week alone. So we talked for a moment about Carl Bernstein's story at CNN. But on Friday last week is when the New York Times broke the story about the Russia paying bounties to Taliban fighters in Afghanistan to kill Americans. And of course, there are the usual suspects who's like, oh, you can't believe anything the intelligence community says. And my point was, when you have every major news organization corroborating the story, they do their own confirmation. And when they back it up with multiple sources, there's something there. And so, you know, if you're one of those people who says, oh, well, the New York Times and Washington Post, you can't believe them. You're playing into Donald Trump's hands. And for him to say it's a hoax, anything that is not his storyline is a hoax. That's the only word he knows to say, no, that's not real. And it's the only thing he can come up with. But you wrote also about this Russian bounty story on Monday, and then it got even weirder as the New York Times starts following the money. Hello. And he's still saying it's a hoax.
That really is shocking, because they, you know, the fact that he's calling it a hoax, even though even people in his own, you know, in his own orbit are sort of saying, well, you know, it wasn't verified, or there was no consensus, and yes, we knew about it, and there's all this sort of confusion. Did they not brief him? You know, I mean, they say that there was a PDB,
yeah,
which we know he doesn't read.
Right.
So, you know, he never reads it. So they would have known that he wasn't going to read it, because
yep,
he never does. So if they didn't verbally brief him on it, then they knew that he didn't know, because he doesn't like to hear anything about Russia. We've heard this from several different sources over the course of the last few months, that, it, you know, any national security briefing, he gets upset when they bring up Russia or bring up anything to do with the election interference or any of that. So they have stopped, you know, briefing him. So we don't know yet exactly what happened there. But it doesn't really matter, because as Joe Biden said in his speech yesterday, you know, it's a dereliction of duty either way.
Exactly.
If whether he didn't know it, and because they didn't brief him because he's, you know, it hurts his fee-fees to hear about Russia, or if he did know about it and just doesn't care. Now, I lean toward the latter, to be honest. I think they did tell him. I think he knew.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care.
Right.
And partially, you know, because he wanted to bring, he had his, you know, he had his heart set on his G7 that was coming to the U.S. It was going to be his big show.
Yep.
It was going to show off for all of his little, you know, all his peers there, and have them all, you know, worship at his feet, he thought. Remember, at one point he was even going to have it at Doral.
Yep.
At his,
oh,
at his golf. So he was really looking forward to this.
Yes,
and then that damn virus got in the way.
Yep.
And Merkel apparently told him that she wasn't going to come.
That's
and he
right.
got mad at her and slammed down the phone and was all upset. So I think a lot of it had to do with that, and the fact that he was going to bring Putin to that meeting regardless of their wishes, and wanted to, you know, install him. Now, we can all ask ourselves again why he has this, you know, this obsession with pleasing Putin, but that seems to be what he had on his mind. So this Afghanistan, you know, bounty situation, he would have heard that and just gone, oh, you know, they all do that. Who cares? You remember back when during the campaign, the 2016 campaign, when they told him that Putin killed journalists, he said, well, I think we do a lot of killing too. You know, he doesn't care.
Right.
He thinks that's normal. He thinks it's fine. And he had his own agenda with Vladimir Putin that he wanted to fulfill. And also, he had his own agenda with the Taliban. Remember,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was bringing the Taliban to Camp David. Everybody was just stunned. In fact,
right,
that's one part of Bolton's book that's really fun to read, because,
oh, really?
Like, the shock among the national security advisors and the people in the Pentagon that he was going to bring the Taliban,
oh my God,
to Camp David,
oh my
and
God,
hash out a deal over the weekend, right?
Sure.
I mean, they didn't have a deal. And he was going to, well, let me get in there and do it. And, of course, by that point, they'd already seen him with Kim Jong-un, and they're kind of going, oh, dear God, what's he going to do? And look, and as luck, actually not luck, but as it happened, they, you know, blew up an American in a convoy with 11 other people just before this meeting was supposed to take place. Makes you wonder about that bounty, doesn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yes.
He had to cancel it. But he had dreams, and, you know, he had it in his mind that he was going to cut a deal with the Taliban, and that Russia, and that Putin was going to come to the U.S., and they were going to put on a big show and welcome him back into the G7. And, you know, so he didn't want to hear about any bounties. He didn't want to hear anything bad
nope.
about his friend
nope.
Vlad.
Nope.
You know,
No, just like, and the stories that Carl Bernstein exposed about his conversations with Erdogan of Turkey. Erdogan's the one who wanted him to betray the Kurds, who were our greatest allies in that area. We just left them for slaughter. And apparently, Erdogan calls him any hour, day or night. He takes his call like they're best buds. I mean, this is scary shit. This is a man who has the nuclear codes, who doesn't have a clue how you work on the world stage, how you deal with these people who are evil. Those are the ones he's sidling up to, which scares the shit out of me.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it scared me from the beginning, and I knew that this was going to happen. He is an ignorant person. I mean, he's more ignorant than the average person. That's the thing. I mean, he's not, I mean, yeah, I think you could pick up, you know, a lot of people, you know, just go pick somebody up off the street who would be, you know, probably better informed about these really complicated issues. I mean, him meddling in the Middle East there, taking Erdogan's call in the middle of the night, pulling the troops out of Syria the way that he did. And, you know, I mean, we can argue all day and night about our involvement in the Middle East. And, you know, I think you and I would both agree that, you know, we have been overextended there for a long time. Afghanistan, they've got to, you know, figure out a way to get out of there.
Of course.
But this idea of this capricious ignoramus getting on the horn and then just issuing orders like this, and everybody kind of going, gee, I guess we have to do it, right? I mean, again, reminding us that the president is extremely powerful. I mean, this position is very, very powerful. And when you put someone like this in there, this is where the danger is. Now, there will be smarter Trumps.
Yeah. Yeah,
there will be people that have an actual agenda. I mean, with Trump, it's all about him.
Yep.
Just, you know, it's all just him. He acts on impulse, and you know, as Bolton says in his book, you know, everything is about how do I get reelected. So that's his only motive for doing anything. But somebody else is going to see this and recognize that they can push an agenda. I mean, we had an inkling of this with Dick Cheney.
Yes,
we saw what that was like, and I think that you can find, you know, somebody like Josh Hawley or Tom Cotton. I mean, there are people coming up.
Yes, there are.
Maybe even Liz Cheney.
Well, believe me, I'm in no way, shape, or form a fan of Liz Cheney's, but I got to give her some props because she's the only one who's standing up to him. She has openly challenged him on a number of fronts, from masks to other things too. I mean, so I give her credit for that.
On this Russia thing, she did.
Yes. Yeah. So, but I think she sees the writing on the wall, and she knows that the end is coming for him because she's not a stupid woman. Some of these people are. They're going to go down on his sinking ship. I just want to know when they all start jumping.
Will we ever understand this, how they're going down on this sinking ship with him? This is the thing. I honestly, you know, I get him. He's this, you know, sort of a celebrity, you know, a political celebrity. And he is someone who has managed to sort of hoodwink a rather large segment of the population into this cult-like devotion. All right, well, it's weird and whatever, but we've had cults before. But these people in the Congress, you know, these elected Republican officials, this is something I will never understand. Even now, where you've got, in fact, that's what I wrote about for Salon today, was this, you know, you've got these leaks coming out of the administration on the Russia story and the Carl Bernstein story.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those things are coming from a very high level, and they are risky leaks. I mean, especially on the Russia story. Yes, clearly leaks coming out of the NSA, right? Mm. There are leaks coming out of like the Treasury Department, where they're talking about how they found the money trail. I mean, this is not the kind of thing that we would normally see. It really isn't. And it's kind of amazing. It's coming from a number of different directions. There seems to be an idea that, you know, Trump is weak right now. He's not looking like he's going to get reelected. I mean, God willing. But, you know, he's definitely as weak as we've seen him. And there seems to be a break in that regard, in that people are coming out and going, wait a minute. Okay, now's the time. Let's, you know, let's stick in the knife and deliver the coup de grace. But, you know, what about the Congress. I mean, these people just marched in lockstep. They heard about this Russia thing and went along with it just like everybody, like they always have.
Exactly.
You hear a little bit, you know, Lindsay says a little thing here, and you hear Mitch kind of, you know, well, wear a mask. And, you know, you see a little bit of deviation, but nothing major.
No.
And what is wrong with these people? I mean, are they that afraid of this Trump cult? I mean, at some point or another, the smart move. That's why I kind of look at Liz Cheney going, maybe she's a little smarter than the rest of them. And
exactly.
She sees that now's the time to make her move.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
Yep. Yeah, me too.
Heather Digby Parton, find her, of course, at digbysblog.net and at salon.com. Whenever we get together, Heather, the time goes so fast. I need to get you on earlier because we need more time to talk. But we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us today. And
My pleasure.
This just underscores the need for everyone to vote in November because we can't take anything for granted. They will lie, cheat, and steal their way through this election. We got to get them out of there.
All right. Happy 4th.
Thank you. You too. Thanks, Heather. Bye.
Sure.
All right. And with that, we're done. We'll see you tomorrow with Howie Klein. Don't forget, 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. See you then.